This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Hope everyone is doing well and you enjoyed UFC 313 Fight Week. Just got back from Vegas a couple days ago. That was an experience, a very busy week, lots going on there, but of course it all culminated in the main event, Alex Pereira losing the light heavyweight title to Magomed Ankalaev, the first UFC title change of 2025. Sees the light heavyweight belt go back to Dagestan. A close fight between these two. I was cage side for it. I thought Ankalaev got rounds 2, 3, and 4 and was the rightful winner there. Could see the case for Pereira, I guess, getting 1, 3, and 5, but I did think this was the right decision and the right day to crown a new champion at 205 pounds. That was, of course, the biggest storyline coming out of this event. And in lieu of Pereira losing his title, a lot of people questioning, is the UFC washed? Does the UFC have a star power problem? Who are the next crop of fighters who are going to headline pay-per-views and be the big names that we all want to tune in for, pay our hard-earned money for? Pereira definitely is still one of those and was as champion, but we know the state of his career. He's 37 years old. Maybe this was the pinnacle and the biggest and best fights are behind us instead of in front of us. I know a lot of people having questions about, like, how's the UFC going to replace a guy like this? Who are the next people? And I want to talk a little bit more about that. And joining me to do so will be UFC correspondent Megan O'Leary. And we're going to kind of go over the roster a little bit and see who are some of the names that we think are going to be the anchors for UFC pay-per-views for these big marquee title fights in the next few years here. And I'll be honest, after going through this exercise, doesn't seem quite as grim as some people out there are making it out to be. I think there's a lot of potential there. And I do think this is an interesting time, though, for sure. And Megan and I go in depth on what the state of the star power in the UFC is and who these next big names are going to be. So sit back and enjoy our conversation. I thought a lot of interesting fighters and topics touched on. Megan always bringing the great insight from her many years working for the UFC and, of course, being backstage and getting to see so many of these athletes face to face. So please make sure to like, subscribe, rate, whatever platform you're listening to this on, audio or video. The support is very, very helpful. It means a lot to me over here. So I will take a quick break and be right back with Megan O'Leary. We are back here on the Bonfire with a returning guest. It is Megan O'Leary, UFC reporter extraordinaire, sideline reporter for the NFL, and I think maybe the most important title, Megan, mother-to-be soon.
Yes, I'm very excited. Thank you. It's far and beyond the biggest thing I will ever do in my life and the most exciting and the most nerve-wracking. So we're absolutely thrilled. It's been a long journey for us, so we're just so glad to have gotten here.
Yeah, and you're still keeping very busy. You were working UFC 313 last weekend. You're on UFC Vegas 104 this weekend. When do we kind of step away for a little bit and take a break?
Yeah, I'm actually not allowed to fly in my third trimester. I am having a high-risk pregnancy. So far, everything's going great, thank God. But we just want to keep it that way. So Miami will be my last travel. You'll see me at Apex shows after that, but I won't be on the road until baby is born and I return from maternity leave.
Okay, amazing. I love that.
Yes, yes.
Awesome. And I mean, UFC 313, we're still kind of dealing with the fallout a little bit just a couple days ago. Like if someone says to you, you know, later in the year, whatever, like what was your memory that you're going to maybe retain from this past fight week? Is there something that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there were some really big finishes. I mean, those you can't take away. I know people were disappointed with how some of the things played out, particularly in the main event. But for me, I always try to remember there were big finishes. I think it was the first fight of the night was absolutely unbelievable. There were a lot of great performances. A lot of young stars and young athletes really stepped up. But I'll probably remember it as the fight that Magomed Ankalaev defeated Alex Pereira. Whether it was the fight people wanted it to be in terms of how he won or lost. It's still what happened, at least on the judges' scorecards there. And I think it was a big deal. I felt like Alex didn't seem like himself out there, but I think Ankalaev did exactly what he needed to do. He did exactly what it took to get a win and a victory, and he felt like he didn't need to necessarily rely on his grappling that much because his striking was working, and whether that was because Alex was wary of the grappling and nervous of it while he was on the feet or whatever it may be, it still ended up working for him. And so I do think, you know, I'm curious to see how a rematch would go. I'm curious to see what adjustments there would be. For me, I don't want to take anything away from Ankalaev as much as I, you know, respect Alex. I think that there could be a lot down the road between the two of them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the size of Alex can win the next one, has the makings of a great trilogy at light heavyweight. And yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to take anything away from Ankalaev's win. I mean, I know people are bringing up like the active schedule for Alex, but this is the longest break he had between fights coming into this one. I think it was only by like one day, but still, I mean, I feel like you can't really, like if we had had this fight where the Khalil Roundtree fight was in October, where it was like three back to back to back, maybe you could bring some things up. But I said this last week when I had Paul Felder on the show, like, I don't feel like you can make any excuses for this scenario. They were both fully trained, had the right amount of time, knew this was coming. It was all there.
And I think what people forget is no matter how hard anybody trains or how dedicated they are in camp or how many distractions they cut out of their life, sometimes you just don't feel your best when it's time to perform. And sometimes you can have the greatest camp of your life and still go out there and be like, what was that from my performance? And sometimes we see guys who come off the couch or have terrible camps or were battling injuries, whatever it might be, and have the performance of a lifetime. It all depends on so many things to go right. And you have to make sure that nothing goes wrong. And you know, I don't know in terms of, I saw some things about maybe how Alex was hurt, and there was obviously illness going around for quite a lot of people. I don't know if any of that touched him or not. But sometimes it just doesn't work out the way you want it to, regardless of how dedicated you are. And I hope that people realize like that doesn't mean that Alex was like on the road too much or doing X, Y, and Z too much. He probably just didn't feel right when the time to perform came upon him. And sometimes you just can't help it.
Yeah, and that's what we love about the sport, though, right? There's infinite variables that are involved with this, and you said it great there. You could have your worst performance on your best day or your best performance on your worst day, and it's like you never really know until you get it in the cage there, even despite doing everything right. So that's what makes it so fun, and that's why, you know, when we talk about the greatest of the great of all time, for them to be able to make things go their way time after time after time, even when maybe some of those variables are going against them, those are the ones that kind of separate from the greatest to like the all-timers.
Exactly. And I also feel like we are such big recency bias people in this sport, and rightfully so. We move on every week. Mm-hmm. But like him losing to Ankalaev, a very formidable foe, a very well-rounded fighter, somebody who's been preparing for this particular matchup for so long because he's wanted it, that doesn't take away all of the other things Alex has done in two weight classes, accepting all of these fights on short notice. Like I think that can be hard because the messaging from the public can often be, well, what have you done for me lately? And that defines who you are as a whole. And that's not the case. It's just, you know, he might need just a real break, like a real actual year-long break. And maybe he doesn't. I have no idea. I'm just speculating. But if, you know, if he can return healthy and motivated again, like, I don't think it takes anything away from his legacy. The best lose, yes, Khabib has not, but you know, everybody else did. And I think, you know, it's also how you bounce back from things. We saw him bounce back from the Adesanya loss. We'll see if he can bounce back from this. And if he wants to, whatever he wants to do, you know, full support.
Yeah, it's just, as I said, such an unpredictable sport. And for him, I mean, he's been doing this for years and years. He had a whole kickboxing career. Like, he is 37 years old. Maybe this was where, you know, the end point drops off. But even if it was, this man had, you know, perhaps the greatest year in UFC history in 2024. So, like, he's got so much to stand on. So we'll see what happens. But for you, like, on the Ankalaev side, is that one of the most enjoyable parts of your job, is that backstage interview with a first-time UFC champion when they, like, realize that moment they've been chasing for their entire life?
Yeah, it was so sweet. He came backstage to do the interview, and he was with Sergey, our incredible interpreter. Mm-hmm. And he goes, is it okay if I hold the belt? And I'm like, you better go get the belt. Like, he had someone from his team holding the belt. And it was really sweet. For me, it's like to see those interactions, because you know it, but not everybody may realize it, is we see both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. You know, we see people walking out, hanging their head in defeat when it's like, I just want to hug everybody and be like, no, you should be so proud. But we also get to see these new victors, and whether it's their debut or winning a huge matchup or winning the world title. And to be able to share those moments is really special. And also to give them like a platform to share how they feel, because sometimes it's really interesting. It's not like, yeah, I'm the best. Sometimes it's like these really crazy feelings. You're like, hey, you just became world champion. And like, you didn't like that performance or whatever it might be. And so it is kind of fun to dissect those conversations and dissect how they're feeling in the moment. But Uncle Ev, it was funny. I was like, please go get your belt. Like, you have earned every second of that. Like, hold it tight. And so as soon as he did, it looked at home on his shoulder when he was chatting.
Yeah, it's always so raw. Like, are you usually the first person who gets them back there?
Yeah, because we are live. So our post show immediately goes live as soon as the main event is over. And if we can't get them right away, sometimes they won't make the show. So our PR team does a really great job with particularly the co-main and the main, ensuring that they can get to us so that they are seen in the live show broadcast, as opposed to everybody else who kind of doesn't really have necessarily a timestamp on how quickly they need to get it done. And it is nice sometimes, like new champs, they usually don't ask for too much. So like, he wasn't asking to go shower or like hang out with his friends first. He came right over to us, which is always very helpful for our scheduling needs as well.
Yeah, I love that. Just last thing, I guess, on UFC 313, Justin Gaethje with a huge win in the co-main event against Fazeev. Very interesting situation right now at lightweight. There's like three or four potential title contenders, with Justin Gaethje, with Armin Sarukian, with Charles Oliveira, and then Ilya Topuria now looming, vacating and moving up. What do you think is the, for you personally, like, what would be the most exciting next lightweight title fight if you had to pick between those four?
I have like such a PC answer, because I would be totally fine with any of those matchups.
I know.
However, I can see Justin's point. I think he made a tweet earlier today where he said the only bout I lost was more of like an exhibition for a belt, like to, you know, have a big fight. I totally get that and I respect that. And that was a year ago. Mm-hmm. I like the matchup with Ilya. I think for somebody to say like, I'm happy relinquishing my belt because I'm so confident in what I'll be able to do in another weight class, is really cool. And I also think his attitude towards it has been great of, hey, I'm not saying I need to skip the line. Like, he hasn't really been advocating like, I'm better than these guys or I deserve it more. I just think personally and stylistically that is a really intriguing matchup. However, I could not deny any of them. And I think that eventually seeing all of those guys fight for the title, whether it's a repeat of guys who've already had it or had that opportunity or not, I think it would be very great. And I like that this is happening at lightweight, where sometimes we felt like there's a logjam of talent. And it's like they were all kind of fighting each other. But where can we go from there? I think that there, to have multiple contenders possible for the next title shot, makes it really interesting in a division that is so packed with talent, but also packed with a lot of the old guard as the new guard tries to come in as well.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. I mean, no doubt.
Yeah.
UFC brass over there. I don't know. For some reason, I feel like Gaethje might get it. Just like, it's kind of like the Dustin Poirier thing, right? Like the last chance. He's, you know, kind of 36 years old. Like, the timing may not work out for it again. All those other guys, Ilya, Armin, not Charles so much, are like, you know, younger, and their time will come, I think, even if it's not next. So I could see Justin getting it. That's probably the ingredients for the most exciting fight out of all three of those.
I was going to say, who wouldn't want to watch that? So
exactly. I mean, Justin Gaethje, 14 bonuses and 14 UFC fights.
Insane.
Like, this is truly ridiculous. So
it's insane. Yeah. God bless his parents.
I know, right? It's crazy too, because this one with Fazeev, it's like, you could maybe say this was on the bottom five of Justin Gaethje fights in terms of excitement, still gets fight of the night, and it's like still, you know, arguably the best fight on the card.
Yes, I totally agree. I agree. I loved the fight, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I found the whole thing intriguing. I thought the way both of them were calculating their strategy throughout the fight was very intriguing. I loved that matchup. I give so much credit to Fazeev. The guy hadn't fought in 18 months, gets what, 11 days notice, something like that. You know, I can't wait to see him compete again, because I think he's going to have a very bright next year or so if he's able to get some consistency.
Yeah, and I think he was actually doing some interviews today. He was on Ariel Helwani's show, and he said he's debating going down to featherweight, which is pretty interesting. He said he barely had to cut anything for this one, even though it was 11 days notice. So that's very fascinating.
Very muscular, though. Like, you know, it didn't look like you'd have a ton to pull from. And sometimes those are the guys that have the hardest time cutting weight. But I'd support it for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun fights for him there. Yeah. So we'll see if he ultimately pulls the trigger on that. But yeah, Megan, as I said off the intro of the show, kind of reason I wanted to have you on today. A lot of people talking about, you know, coming off this, Alex Pereira loses, like, you know, did UFC's biggest star at the moment who was active just suffer a defeat to a guy who is, you know, rather unheralded, doesn't have the same kind of fan base, and having people once again raise this question, which comes up, I feel like, every few years of, like, does UFC have a star problem? Who's the next crop of guys who are going to come through and break through? And I'm kind of the opinion, like, this stuff is cyclical, right? Like, it always comes and goes. There was always the questions after GSP and then Connor when he slowed down, Ronda when she retired. Like, you know, it's not always right there in your face, but it seems like it always kind of regenerates over time. And sometimes there is longer lulls than others, but I think, you know, maybe we're in one of those right now. But I kind of asked you to look over the roster and, like, identify some people who you could see as, like, carrying pay-per-views and being the front runner names for the company over the next couple of years here. And honestly, like, I told you to pick five, I picked five. I don't know how much crossover there will be, but say we end up with seven different people here, Megan, and they fight twice a year. That's your 14 pay-per-views right there. So, like,
exactly. I don't think
it's as grim as maybe some people look. Some of these people, as I put my list together, same weight class. So, you know, there's only room for one champion. So that's, like, something that you never know. But I guess as you were going through this thought experiment there before we start listing the names, did you have any takeaways or any thoughts, like, generally speaking?
Well, I think that we also sometimes take things for granted. Like, we spoke offline and said, okay, we're not going to include certain names because we don't know how much longer they'll be fighting, or they're already, like, very much established stars in our organization. Mm-hmm. And it got me to think, I mean, we've got guys like, you know, John Jones and Nate Diaz, and, you know, that we've recently seen compete, you know, that we're very lucky to have had them, you know, for however long we did, or we will have them fight. And, you know, guys like Max Holloway, like, these are all, to me at least, very established stars that can carry pay-per-views if they had to do one every single month. But we're not including them because we don't know how much activity they want to have. And it's already something that I think all the fan base can say, okay, these guys are certainly established as mega stars in the organization. But I do think that what is hard is being able to see promotion like we did back in the day with maybe a Connor or a Ronda or a Chuck Liddell, when it was like that singular star that was kind of everywhere. And we might not necessarily be seeing that, but I don't think that any of these names could be prevented from one day having that, should that path follow correctly. The number one thing that matters the most in this sport is, can you win? You know, and can you perform? And I think that we have a lot of athletes on this very full roster that can perform, that can step up, that can be a star on the mic and a star in the octagon, which is really the combination that you have to have at the end of the day. And so a lot of youth and a lot of talent in the youth. And so I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, for sure. And kind of the criteria I gave you a little bit was, like, you know, a mix of personality, like their background and their personal story, how they connect with the fans, how they present themselves in the cage, on the microphone, and just, like, you know, the fights that they possibly have around them with other names that could elevate their brand. And I think what you said there was great in terms of, like, you know, Connor, especially, like, these Connor, McGregor, and Ronda Rousey were anomalies, right? Like, we might not get another one of them in our lifetime. Usually it takes a longer build. Like, we think of George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva and Chuck Liddell and John Jones. That stuff didn't happen overnight. Like, this, before they became true stars, they were in the UFC for 6-7 years.
And that was on prelims.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the things I noticed kind of on my list here when I was putting together, like, the debut days for most of the people on my list are either in 2020 or later, which isn't that long ago.
Yes.
That's a few years of COVID era where you didn't have the chance to compete in, like, you know, certain platforms and things like that. So I think it does make, like, this kind of perspective on these things even more interesting. I guess one of my takeaways before I let you open the list, and which could be, like, maybe a concern, not a ton of Americans, I will say that. I had a lot of international people on my list, and, you know, people think of the UFC as an American-based company. I think that's becoming less and less, more so, right? Like, everyone thinks of the ESPN pay-per-view deal is like, oh, how many pay-per-views can they sell on ESPN Plus without thinking a lot of the UFC's revenue comes from international rights deals and other things like that. So I think it is maybe too minor of a scope to only think of, like, how do they sell pay-per-views on ESPN Plus?
I absolutely agree with you. I actually have seven because depending on who you say, I'm going to make sure I have some backups. And only one of them is American. Yeah.
There you go. And I think also a precursor to this conversation, like, we don't know what traditional pay-per-view is going to look like going into 2026. Maybe the UFC, you know, leaves ESPN Plus or, you know, goes to Netflix or Amazon or one of these other things where traditional pay-per-view doesn't look like what it is now. So there's not the who can get my $80 or my $90 on this Saturday night. So that's something to also consider and how the landscape of the sport could change pretty soon here.
Exactly. Yeah. In very little time, we'll soon find out. And I feel like, you know, I think we're all waiting, kind of holding our breath to see what that will look like.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Okay, Megan. All right. I don't know. Did you rank yours or did you just,
I didn't rank them.
Okay, me neither. So yeah, I think, yeah, for sure. Okay. So, I will let you throw out the first name who was on the tip of your tongue here.
Okay, well, this is probably one of the most obvious, one of, I think, at least the two or three that are the most obvious. We've already mentioned his name, but I want to say Ilia Topuria. I'm a big fan of this guy's star power. I think being able to see somebody who can carry themselves in multiple languages is so important for an international company. Not only does he have, you know, the English language skills to appeal to everybody who can understand him in those interviews. Of course, he speaks fluent Spanish. He's from Georgia, so he's got a lot of European support as well. We've talked about this before, but he's got, you know, deals with designers, and he is showing up in all different places on really big platforms where we don't necessarily see our athletes place, particularly like, you know, collaborations with different soccer teams. I think he went to visit somebody and they did a big collab and people were like pretty shook over it. Mm-hmm. He can handle himself really well. His confidence is something akin to Conor McGregor, not the same way, but it just reminds me of the way a young Conor was in terms of like absolute self-belief. Like I can be anybody and I really like don't care about your opinion. Ilia very much has that type of swagger and that self-belief. And I think you need to have that to be a megastar in this organization, because the work in the octagon and in the training room is one thing. But as you know, Mike, the media grind that these guys have to do, and you have to pretend every interview that you have done, whether you did 24 in one day, is the first time you've ever heard that question. Yeah. It's something that not everybody is good at and not everybody can handle, but I think Ilia Topuria is one of those people. And then his fighting style, 16-0. I mean, the guy is a devastator inside the octagon. He's still very young. There's still so much upside to what his future might look like. And I think intriguing matchups moving to 155. So I truly think, and I think we've seen a little bit of it. That's why I'm starting with him. We've seen a little bit of this already exist. Like, can he be that megastar? Can he headline a pay-per-view? Can he headline cards? And I do certainly believe that he can.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially after the knockout of Max Holloway, I mean, that took it way over the level, that superstar status stuff. And yeah, we hear all the stuff attached to him, like stadium shows, all these things. We don't know what's actually going to pan out. But like the fact that he is even pegged to someone who could support something like that is obviously huge for the UFC. They've only done a handful of stadium shows, and look at the people who have headlined those. Yeah. So it's a lot. I guess, yeah, like 28 years old, as I said, only debuted in the UFC in October 2020, and look where he is now. The only concern I have around Ilia is if just this move to lightweight doesn't pan out, you know, like he suffers a couple losses, loses to Islam if he gets the shot right away, and then maybe loses to another high level guy after that, then you're like, ooh, that's that kind of stunted this. Whereas I feel like if he was able to stay at featherweight and continue defending that title, there could have been some real big, you know, I guess, like fights attached to him where he is the A side unquestionably.
Yeah. Yeah, but I you know, I think that's what's fun about this is he's testing not just his abilities, but also his stardom to move up and see, can I not just win fights, but can I also carry these fights with guys who are megastars in their own right? So I think it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd love to see him in like a big spot, you know, like, you know, if they do the Islam fight, that seems like it's got International Fight Week written all over it. They have a few options in play, it feels like, for that card. But yeah, I'm curious to see if that's actually the direction they go, because it seems like Islam and his team are a little like, win a fight first. But I've said this over and over, I think if that's the fight Hunter Campbell and Dana White and all them decide they want to make, I do think Islam will sign the contract and be fine with it. But he's putting the preempt out there as if he wins, everyone's going to say he just beat another featherweight.
Yeah I mean, yeah, no, I get it, and I understand it from both perspectives, but I think you're right. If Dana Hunter won it, it's most likely gonna happen.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I think that ducktails perfectly into my first choice on there. I did have Ilia as one of the names I wrote down. How could you not? You know, like, you know, so much potential right there, given his age and his fighting style and all that stuff. But the person we just talked about as well, I've had to put on there, Islam Makhachev, just because, you know, I know maybe you could put him already in that echelon of like being the star, but I do think there's more room for growth for him in terms of like, you know, fan support and following. But man, you could make the argument he's the biggest star in the UFC right now. Like, his social media following definitely compares to anyone out there. It seems like the numbers when we put out interviews and media days and things like that, like, resonate really, really well. So yeah, he's right up there. And if he can keep winning, if he can go to welterweight and get a second belt, like, I think he is a guy that the UFC can anchor on. My only question is, how many more years does he really have in there? I feel like he's got at least two more good ones, but, you know, already 33. So he's getting into that territory of like, where are we at?
Yeah, one of my favorite things, and you know, when we were compiling this list, it was not just about, you know, fighting ability, but also, can they sell themselves outside? One of my favorite things is how much people are starting to connect with Islam and kind of get his personality. Like, he and Khabib are some of my favorite people to interview of all time, because they are low-key so funny. And to see him kind of open up more and more as these fights come about, and, you know, he'll be making jokes. He's a very proud father. So anytime you bring up his kids, you know, you can kind of tell it tugs right on his heartstrings that he can't wait to go home to them. Talks about his farm and his animals and stuff. And for me, sometimes we're used to seeing certain athletes from certain cultures a bit more reserved. And I think he and Khabib, when they feel like they're in the right setting, they really let their personality shine. And it's been a real joy for me to kind of see that come out and see the guy that we know behind the scenes, like, flourish on camera for a lot of these different interviews. And I think that as people kind of get to know Islam in the way that they did with Khabib, they will start to see him as like a really appealing person who's funny, whose interviews are interesting to listen to, are insightful. And I find that to be such a fun portion of making him a star in this organization, is him letting his personality show. So he was on my list as well, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more. And you kind of alluded to it off the top, talking about Ilya and like how he can speak multiple languages. Obviously, Islam has, you know, got a pretty good grip on his English now. Like, how important is that really? I mean, I think even if you could just learn a little bit, like Ankalaev, we saw when he won the fight in Abu Dhabi, he's just like, looks into the camera, Alex, stop running, and kind of got it a little bit. And then you hear some of the stuff he said at the press conference and post fight, where he is like talking a little bit of trash, and it is pretty edgy and like good stuff. If you could say like 10% of that in English, I think that would go a long way for someone like Ankalaev, where people do feel like that connection is kind of holding them back. And I feel like Islam and Khabib mastered that.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, it's something that I remember from way back in the day. Mm-hmm. I remember a big complaint about Jose Aldo was that he didn't speak English. And Anderson also, Silva too. I say this as the basic bitch who's Italian has basically vanished. So I'd only speak one language. I used to be all right with Italian, and that's pretty much gone now. So I am not knocking or pretending that any of this should happen or is easy to happen. Very clear on that. But I do remember people wanting, like, saying Jose Aldo would be this worldwide megastar if he could speak English. Now, of course, he did come into that. People who like fights around the world, of course, know who Jose Aldo is. They adore him, respect him, and admire him. But I do remember back when he was an active fighter. I think it might have been when he won the title the second time that people were like, if he spoke English, this would be so much crazier. And I think that nowadays people are understanding with social media and with YouTube and with so many different mediums to have your voice heard, that it is helpful to be able to do the translation yourself, or at least attempt to. And that to me has been a big change for our sport in the past, like, even 5 years, I mean, definitely 10 years, but even 5 years, just seeing people wanting to make that effort to kind of be more marketable for their careers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look at Alex Pereira. Like, he didn't need to speak English. He just said chama, and that's pretty much like all you need to work for you. Look at Anderson Silva. Like, he just said I back and as normal, and like, that was two things that were associated to him. But
just good English. I think they just get shy.
Yeah, you just need a little something, and honestly, it goes a long, long way. So I do think for someone like Magomed Ankalaev, you know, maybe that puts him on this list if he just has that like a little bit more, because I think he's got a lot of other good stuff going for him, even though maybe some people don't see it quite yet. Okay, back to you. Who did you also have on your list?
I'm between three that I should say right now, because I already know that you're probably going to have one of them on your list. I'm going to say Kayla Harrison.
Okay.
Because I think we need a woman on this list. Mm-hmm. I think that we have gone through times where there has been these super dominant female champions. And of course we have that now, but with, we had Joanna that people like around the world knew, and Rose, and, Amanda Nunes, of course, you know, Valentina, and Zhang Weili, people know, and their domination in the octagon can't be denied. But I think Kayla Harrison is the American on my list, because I think she has such an interesting story that if people really knew a little bit more about her, because her tenure in the UFC has been so short, that they would really find it appealing. I mean, not only two-time Olympic gold medalist, which is absolutely unbelievable, but she is a mom. She adopted her niece and nephew, and they are her children. And she just absolutely relishes in that mom role, and it's really beautiful. It's the most important thing in her life. She's an incredible mom to them. She even homeschools her kids, which is like, how do you have time for that? No. And then the weight, I mean, she competed, I think her Olympic career was at 171, then yep. She fought at 155, and now we're asking her to make 135, which she has successfully made every time she stepped on the scale in the UFC. But I just think, like, to laud her accomplishments outside of the octagon is important. And also to see somebody who probably could have stopped a long time ago, particularly in MMA, she was winning a lot of money in other organizations, like probably could have stopped, but yet she still has these goals while doing what many people seem to be impossible. Like, how do you balance being a mom and raising kids and, you know, having these major, major goals that are in a very selfish sport? And she does all of that. And I just think women around the nation, if they knew her story, whether they like fighting or not, would be inspired by her in the same way that a lot of people found that inspiration in Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, I think that is an excellent choice. I had her just outside my top five, but like, I was hoping she'd come up at some point there. I think the only concern is just like, how much longer does she want to do this at 34 years old and with that lifetime of combat sports? But she's just right there. I think if this Juliana Pena fight happens, that's really like her breakthrough, where she's going to be able to present her full self. Like, it's kind of hard to talk shit to Holly Holm, who's like one of the nicest people in Vieira, who doesn't
and really... incredibly accomplished.
Yeah, exactly. So like, they haven't given her, I guess, that dance partner to fully lean into her personality, but like, she can speak incredibly on the mic, and she knows how to build something up here. So I think her and Juliana will be a big fight. And honestly, you look around, besides if they did a super fight between Weili and Valentina, I think she's the one who could headline a pay-per-view show like as a champion on her own. I know like the women's title fight seemed to kind of get slotted into a co-main event or something like that. I think she can take the division to a different level in that regard.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So no, she's unreal. We'll see when this fight happens. I know they're kind of both hinting at it now. So that's going to be big time stuff, I think, whenever that one comes together and is announced. And then we'll see where they go from there afterwards. If they can get Amanda Nunes back, that's obviously a huge deal as well, and can be an easy pay-per-view headliner any day of the week.
Absolutely.
Okay, I will go with, I guess, my American on the list, since we're kind of in the same vein, comes from a high-level grappling background, not a champion yet. Probably the person who's most out of place on this, given where they're at in their career. I had Bo Nickel. And
love
I think,
it.
Yeah, I think like all the potential in the world. I think it's the UFC career has felt a little slow at this point. Like, Contender Series was almost 3 years ago now, which feels crazy for him. But I do think kind of the rumors going around, if he does end up fighting Rainier DeRitter in Iowa, that's, I think, one that would kind of really bring things off to the races. But yeah, if Bo Nickel can live up to all the potential everyone has been pegging on him since day one when he stepped into MMA, he should be an American-born major draw for the UFC, potentially undefeated, all that stuff. He's got all the assets. It's just, when are we going to get there is the question.
Well, and it's NCAA season, so we absolutely need to include Bo Nickel in the conversation. But also, I mean, he's a great example for wrestlers. You know, you're able to pursue your dreams in that discipline and then come over to mixed martial arts and be successful and not necessarily even be one-dimensional. This is a guy who likes to strike as well. And so I think that's a great pick. And I'm excited to see him back at the octagon. Hopefully we see it sooner than later.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, yeah, not much more to add there. I think it's just kind of a wait and see. But the most recent person on this list, you know, only debuted in March 2023. So he's still young in the game, but yeah, I think people, you know, when you're saying from day one that you could beat Khamzat Chimaev and all that stuff, like people are keen to see that happen sooner than later, but respect to how the UFC and how his management are bringing him along carefully.
Yeah.
You jump in too deep and you suffer a big time loss against a top tier guy that can, you know, change things for you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm going into my next one.
Okay.
All right. Cause I love this one. And yeah. I'm not sure if you'll agree with me or not here, but I think it's fun for a multitude of reasons, but I'm going with Carlos Prates.
Mm. Yep.
Because I think that obviously his fighting style, every time he steps in the octagon, it's can't miss television. I think he's like won 13 in a row with 11 finishes. He's so exciting to watch. He comes from a team that is very entertaining and kind of gets that this is also like entertainment. Mm-hmm. So they understand that winning comes first, but they also, you know, they have the team jackets and they do fun stuff on social media. And I just think his personality is fantastic. This is a guy who won his fight in Australia and was walking around backstage with a Cash Money Records jacket on. And it was like the greatest thing I had ever seen. He's smoking cigarettes. He's kind of breaking the mold. You know, he is a dad and he'll speak really lovingly about his daughter who lives in Australia, actually speaks multiple languages. And I just think that given the right matchups and the right platform to continue to get there, I can see just your average fan really connecting with him because he's kind of like this carefree, laissez-faire attitude, even though he's an absolute killer inside the octagon. And he's just, he's energetic and he's fun to watch. He's fun to be around. He's fun to talk to. And I think the more his voice is heard, the more his style is seen, the more he will connect with fans. So I had to put him on my list. I don't know if you agree or not, but he was going on mine.
He was someone who I thought of. I didn't get him into that top five there, but love everything you said. And I think it is very clear the UFC is really behind him. I mean, he's getting this fight in Miami against Jeff Neal. That's going to be unbelievable action, but they asked him to fill in for against Shavkat in December before they went with Ian Machado Gary. He was hurt. He couldn't do it. I know that he was at least discussed to fight Bilal in Montreal before Jack Del Maddalena. So like, it's clear they're wanting to give him these big time opportunities. So like, they see something in him. So I don't think you can argue with that selection at all. I think he's got it all, but we'll see if, you know, all those things that you said, the cigarette smoking, the drinking, like, does that hold you back between that getting to that B tier and that absolute A tier?
Right.
You know, that's just like the way it be. Who knows? But he's got it all. I love Carlos Prates. So we'll see how things go for him against Jeff Neal. Okay, I'm going with one that's probably a little obvious. If we were ranking them, this would maybe be number one on my list. But
okay.
I went with Tom Aspinall.
He's on my list too.
Yeah, I mean, like, come on. Even if, say, he fights John Jones and loses, worst case scenario for him, John's going to be gone. He's still only 31 years old, and I suspect he will be undisputed heavyweight champion at some point in time, even if he loses to John Jones, and he'll be carrying this heavyweight division for the next, you know, 5-6 years, however he wants to go. Even if, you know, he loses the belt, wins the belt, he'll be in that top three, I feel like, for a very, very long time, if not dominating it forever. And what's more promotable than a English-speaking, big, confident Brit who, you know, has crazy knockout power and finishes everyone in a minute. So, like, Tom Aspinall has got all the ingredients here. It's just, if he beats John Jones, forget about it. Like, this guy could be the face of the UFC. So, like,
absolutely,
it's all there. Win or lose, I feel like Tom Aspinall is going to be someone we're going to be seeing as a prominent figure in the UFC for years to come.
I agree. And we also talked about for a long time with him and Ciryl Gane about this new generation of heavyweight. And I do think that being able to give them the platform and continue to see their evolution inside the octagon. If Tom, like you said, if he beats John, even if he doesn't, if he comes back, most likely he will be champion without a doubt, but to be able, undisputed champion, but to be able to see him and kind of the skill set he possesses, the movement he uses, the athletic ability he relies on in there, as opposed to maybe heavyweights of 5 or 10 years ago, is very different. And I do think that that's also really appealing to fans. It is appealing to people who maybe could compete in the heavyweight division in the future, but didn't necessarily think that their body type or their skill set translated into what we traditionally saw for UFC heavyweight.
Yeah, so it's Tom's got a big year coming up, and I sit here on this day feeling so much more confident than the last time we talked that this John Jones fight actually is happening, because Dana White, after UFC 313, he said he's very confident. The next day, Tom put out a video saying that John's side has, I guess, agreed, or they've come to the deal and they're just figuring out a venue and a date and a location. So this seems like it's all there. I mean, I know he said John still has to sign the contract, but feels like we're on the 1 yard line, to use a NFL term there, Meg.
Yes, no, hopefully that is true. And it's not going to be one of those we went for on a 4th and 1 and didn't get it. You know what I mean?
Picked off at the goal line. We'll see.
Exactly.
Okay, Maggie, do you got another name for me?
Yes. So let's go with a guy who is already sort of doing this, but I'm picking Diego Lopez. Again, the international appeal from Brazil to Mexico to the U.S., and obviously all other countries extended, but his skill set, you know, the 5 in the row, he's title contender now. I think when he was matched up with Brian Ortega, that was kind of the litmus test on a lot of people's radars. Like, can he really do this? Yeah, well, is he just going to knock him out faster? Is he going to be able to compete with him? And we saw him, you know, win that fight with Brian Ortega in Mexico and really find a lot of success there. This is also a guy that's a true gamer. I mean, we talked so much about Dan Ige, and rightfully so. But also the amount that that he went through, that Diego went through that week, when, you know, they're changing the weight class. It's a catch weight. And then, we're changing the weight again. And now Ortega's out. And now Ige's stepping in. Like, there was just so much on his plate that I think he handled it like a pro. He's very young. He hasn't been in the UFC that long. His debut was short notice and absolutely bananas. But I think the way he appeals to so many people, and just a sweet guy, you know, owns his own gym, still teaches there, is always helping out his teammates and training partners. I do think that he has global appeal, and I think his fighting style has already appealed to people globally, and that will just continue, particularly with such a big platform against Volk.
Totally agree. I think I had him like on my list of names right on the bubble there. Like, obviously, depending on the next fight, if he goes out there and beats Volk, like, that's obviously he'd become the champion. I think that's probably the best outcome for him and for the division, just because he doesn't have that attachment to Ilya Topuria. He can say, like, you left the division, you never fought me, all that stuff. I think it's going to be a little harder for featherweight to get like its aura back if Volk wins it. And, you know, we have the memory of what happened with Ilya just over a year ago. So yeah, he's right there. And he's got all the ingredients. You said that when you can get Volkanovski to sit at a press conference and sing about your hair, you've got something good going for you, I feel like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And kudos to Volk for that song voice.
he was unbelievable out there. He always kills it at the press conferences. What a card that is, UFC 314. Like, holy crap. It was great to see all those guys.
I can't wait. I feel like we always do those Miami cards, right? It was the first one we did was just a couple of years ago. I mean, back in Miami after a very long layoff.
Yeah.
And I felt like, man, I felt like it was the most star-studded event we had, maybe besides a Conor McGregor fight. Mm-hmm. And now it's like the tentpole event, at least for the first half of the year, in my opinion, in terms of who goes on the card, what the fights look like, and who's in attendance, which is all really fun as somebody who just loves the sport.
For sure. Yeah. They didn't go to Miami for like 20 years I think, or so. And it was, Dana would always say, like, you know, Florida is a snobby market. Like, they only want the best of the best. So it goes to show like why these cards are coming together. But when they bring it there, they're doing $10+ million gates and it's all coming together. So yeah, Miami very much back as a yearly UFC destination. Like,
and we love it.
Yeah, those cards are beautiful. I still haven't been down there for one yet. I've like, the timing has been weird for me on both. They had to send someone to Saudi Arabia to cover Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua last year. That ended up
being, oh my God,
I can't remember what it was the year before, but hoping I'll be there next month. So
it's great. Can I just give Miami one other shout out? Yeah, because please. And you know how important this is. Backstage, they have a Cuban coffee set up for us.
Oh, let's go.
On Friday and Saturday. And the ladies are just at an absolute dream. They are so sweet. They're like everyone's tias. And they are just making the bomb Cuban coffee for us. And particularly, East Coast pay-per-views go really late.
Yes.
So it's one of those cards where you definitely need it. And so there's just so much to love about the Miami cards. I'm very excited for you.
Yeah, it's delightful. And I guess one name, since we're talking about Miami, didn't make that list, but someone who could be, I don't know if you had him, Patty Pimblett, I feel like.
Patty's on my list. Oh, yes. But I also feel like there's guys like Patty and like Sean O'Malley that – they're also already stars, and we've already seen a lot of their star power. I mean, people wear wigs of both of them, so that's kind of a big deal. I already for me, I also had like two versions of a list where it's like people who are already like quite established and then people who, you know, a lot more in the terms of up and comer than we're even talking about now. And, you know, guys like Carlos Olberg or Raul Rosas or whatever. I think that there's lots of potential for a lot of these names to do major things. It's just hard for us to guesstimate at this point.
For sure. Like you said, you got to win and that, you know, continues everything going. I mean, like you said, Megamed Ankalaev earlier, it's been 14 straight. He adds a little up there and you keep going to 18, 19, like the people, they can't help but care about you. So winning solves everything in the sport. So that's a huge element of it. Like you said, I agree with like the Paddy side, he's already kind of there, but if he can get a win over Chandler, become a top five, if he becomes a champion, like there's a ton there for him. You mentioned his name, Sean O'Malley. What do you kind of just make of him right now? Like I wanted to put him higher on my list, but bantamweight is just such a crazy division to be like, I'm going to sit there and be the champion for 3, 4, 5 fights. You know, we'll see if Merab's capable, but it's real, real hard. But if Sean had won that fight at the Sphere, like who knows how we're talking about him now, but UFC's put all the position in there behind him and gave him all the support, but it's hard to win the fights in arguably the deepest division in the sport.
Yeah. And I think the thing with bantamweight, as I feel with lightweight probably as well, is any of them could defeat anyone else in that division on any given night. It just, a lot of things come into factor here. And I think that they're all separated by such small margins in terms of who would win a matchup, who's a better fighter, who's more well-rounded, that you're right. It's just an embarrassment of riches really in that division. I think if I'm Sean, you know, I know that oftentimes he was going into fights like not fully healthy. I don't think he's ever been able to actually let his body heal up before jumping back into hard training, which is a lot of times what we see with fighters. They just continue to push. You know, the going is good, so just keep getting it until you just can't anymore. And I think allowing fighters to kind of take the breaks if they need it, particularly physically, but mentally as well. So I don't know if that's the case with Sean. I have no idea. I'm just speculating, but I know how hard him and Tim work, how hard they game plan. You know, we see his persona on social media or in interviews, but that's not the guy that's going in and out of the gym, you know, multiple times a day. So I think that if whenever Sean wants to return, I think he's earned the right to return into a big spotlight or a big matchup. But things have to also play out correctly in that division for whenever he does return to get the things that he wants. I mean, because there's fights to continue to be made. There's so much talent. There's guys like Corey Sandhagen, you know, just waiting in the wings for a title shot. There's guys like Chito Vera who, you know, wants to get back to title contention. There's so much talent there that a lot of things have to work out perfectly in order to get, you know, a title shot or a big marquee event.
Yeah. And I think that's honestly like one of the overarching, I guess, narratives of this whole conversation is, the sport isn't what it was 10 years ago, competitive wise. Like it is really hard to stay the champion for 5, 6 title defenses. Like we saw, I guess, more frequently back in the GSP and Anderson Silva days.
Yeah.
The sport has evolved so much. So we really need to appreciate the guys that can actually put something together here, because it's just becoming more and more and more difficult to maintain that. And that's, I guess, like the UFC can't control this at the end of the day. They have to put the fights together that are there with the most deserving people. Sometimes meritocracy does get pushed to the side a little bit, but like it's very, very difficult in this modern era of the sport to be dominant.
Yeah. And I also think that sometimes we don't give enough credit to guys who are just on the top of their division for many years. Mm-hmm. You know, we recognize guys that are legends like Dustin Poirier, and rightfully so. But I think guys who can stay in that mix, particularly if they can stay in the top five for multiple years of their career, like it is so difficult to do that because it means you've had to fight consistently. It's mean you've had to fight other top tier talent. It means you fought on big cards to continue to have your rankings upheld. So I think that we need to do better at giving accolades to people who maybe don't hold that title but are also doing tremendous things to keep a division interesting or continuing to put out big performances. And so I think like I said, we just move so fast that sometimes it's hard to do.
Here's my last name, Megan. You ready?
Give it to me. Yes.
Khamzat Chimaev, I think. We've got 40 minutes without bringing him up, but yes. I feel like he's, of course, like, you know, it's all been there. We know since day one, we pegged this guy's star potential. It's just a question of, can he fulfill it by being active, getting that title fight, winning it, and then being a defending champion. But in terms of the aura, the personality, the fighting style, like we could go on and on. It's all right there in front of us. It's just a question of activity. Where can he fight? And you know, when can he fight?
I love that. He was on my list as well. I think it's undeniable, honestly, at this point. And I think that Robert Whittaker fight really kind of pushed it over the edge of, yes, okay, this guy is for real. He's beating real contenders in real ways. He moved Whittaker's teeth, you know? So there's, I think it's undeniable. And I'm just waiting to see, you know, what happens with him next.
Yeah, I guess sidebar to that, I did put Dricus du Plessis somewhere on my honorable mentions. I mean, this guy, he can talk as good as anyone in the sport right now. He's winning. He's very polarizing to the fans for a number of reasons. You know, love Dricus. I think he's doing it all right now. The only thing I'd like to see for him to, I guess, like test out what he can be is give him, you know, an International Fight Week main event against Khamzat, put him in a Madison Square Garden. Like, I know the way the UFC schedule goes, a champion has to headline Toronto with maybe a weaker main card or Australia show or whatever. Like, this is the way it's always been.
Yeah.
I know Max Holloway said as champion for years, like, I want to be on one of these big marquee events, not like in Edmonton or whatever the case may be, but someone has to do it. So, but I think eventually he needs an opportunity like that. And I think the Khamzat fight would be great. And the winner of that can be one of the UFC poster boys right there.
Megastars. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I also had, I mean, this is a guy that's headlined before and we know he can. It's just, I don't know how much longer he wants to fight for is Brandon Moreno. Mm-hmm. And then Ian Machado Gary, I think, is right on the cusp of, you know, people love to watch him and people love to watch him because they want him to lose. It's kind of like both with him and he's so nice. So, you know, sometimes the hate makes me feel so bad, but I think talent wise as well, he's very young and continuing to evolve. If he doesn't have performances that he likes, he wants to go back to the drawing board. And so, yeah, there's so many, honestly, my, I think I have like 10 names that were all on the cusp, but,
Rattle them off real quick. I have two.
Let's see. Okay, I've got, well, Ignacio Bahamondes, just his personality. The more people get to know him, I think it will be undeniable that he's at least a huge star in this organization. Obviously, we saw this past weekend, that was his third finish in a row. Raul Rosas Jr., Carlos Olberg, then I have, that's my real list, Brandon Moreno, Chito Vera, Paddy Pimblett, Ian Machado Gary, Kyle Bahalio, and, oh yeah, and she's on, Kayla Harrison was on my list. But yeah, those are some of my names that could easily be in my top five.
Perfect. Yeah. I think the only two we didn't touch on that I had was Jean Silva. There's something there with that guy. And Umar Nurmagomedov was another one I put there that obviously he's still young despite the title fight loss. But if you have the last name Nurmagomedov and you're very good at fighting, you have a little bit of a head start.
It's just one loss, you know, he'll be all right.
Exactly. It was to the best guy on ideal circumstances, both of them. I think Umar is going to be someone that can be a big asset for the UFC for several years to come here. So
I agree. Yeah. There's a lot of people to be excited about. There's a lot of reasons to watch fights and there's a lot of talent that is showing their skill right now. And I know that there's a lot of talent just waiting in the wings as well.
For sure. Yeah. Take that, haters. I think the UFC is actually doing this exercise. I feel
like I'm a UFC employee, so don't yell at me, you know, in the comments, please.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, I think, you know, regardless, I think this is put in a lot of context of, like, as we said off the top, you get a few of these names fighting twice a year, if they're champions or headliners, like, you fill out your schedule, you know, maybe there's some work to be done in the tier below of who's headlining the Apex cards and things like that. But I know the fans out there, they're paying their hard-earned money for pay-per-views and that's where they want like the biggest names and the most marquee fights. So I feel pretty good about
the future. And rightfully so. Yeah, sure. And rightfully so. And just a reminder that fighters don't pick if they're at the Apex or what card they're on. They're given an assignment and their job is to say yes to the best of their abilities. And that's what they do. And they're going to try and perform no matter when or where that is. And I think, you know, the athlete always has to come first when we're talking about these conversations. And we're really lucky to have the talent that we have in this organization. And so, you know, whether people might see it as one way or another, they're all trying their very best to perform to the best of their abilities. And so we will always, you know, applaud that for sure.
Love it. Well, someone who always says yes is you, Megan Olivia, as well. Who, when I asked you to come on the show, I very much appreciate that. I know you were not feeling
you're the best.
In the best shape today, but I appreciate you being back here, and we'll definitely do it again soon. Maybe if you're feeling well enough mid-year, we'll try to do our mid-year awards again, but we'll see.
Let's do it before baby's born. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good, Megan. I will probably hopefully see you in Miami, and then yes. I know you'll be on a bit of a break, but hope UFC Vegas 104 goes great this weekend. Anything you wanted to plug or anything before I let you go?
I'm so boring, honestly. Just like, thanks to everyone for being nice about our announcement. It was really kind. I was very, very nervous to see how it would be received, and even more nervous to see how people would receive me looking pregnant on a pay-per-view. And I might cry. It's been so unbelievably kind in a sport that can sometimes be very cruel, that it means a lot, particularly for the two of us that have been around the sport for a long time. So we are so excited for this baby, and to know that other people are excited for us as well, it means the world.
Love it, Megan. Well, congratulations to you and Joe again. Thank you. Appreciate you being here. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'll be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much for Megan for joining. She is going through it, of course, in the thick of her pregnancy. I know maybe she wasn't feeling the best, but came in here, brought the energy and brought a lot of great insight and knowledge that only someone in her position and experience can provide. So always great to have Megan here on the show for these conversations. Hopefully we'll see her again around the half year to maybe do some half year awards, which was our first ever show and podcast together that we did last year. A lot of you seem to enjoy that. As I said in her first appearance back in January on this show, she was a huge motivator for the reason behind this podcast. So always grateful and gracious for Megan Olivia's time. I'm curious what you guys thought of our list. Are we on point? Are we off? Do you think the UFC has a star problem, or could we maybe give you a little bit of hope and inspiration and try to be a little bit more positive on this side of things? So I hope you all enjoyed that chat. Tune in to UFC Fight Night 254 this weekend. Maybe not the strongest card, headlined by Marvin Vettori and Roman Dolidze. A couple decent nuggets on there, but I think it's more so just a waiting period until the monster that is UFC 314 arrives next month in Miami. Hopefully, as Megan said, we can make our way down there. But nevertheless, appreciate everyone tuning in. Thanks to Megan for being here. And until next week, we will see you back here by the Bonfire.